This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. Kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te reo irirangi kotahi. Ko Miria Taku Ingoa.
Ko Zach Tuku Ingoa.
And you're listening to the R1 News Show for Ramere te kaumawhitu o piri on Radio 1. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
No nāianei in the program, we have economist Murat Ungur from the University of Otago Department of Economics coming on to talk about the gross domestic product and global supply chain issues in our weekly segment Business as Usual. Following that, we have research fellow Crystal Olson from the New Zealand Centre for Sustainable Cities coming on to talk about new research surrounding public planning, home design and well-being. Promptly following our conversation with Olson, we have a greasy little astrology report for all you Aries and Tauruses out there. Lastly but not leastly, Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll will be joining us in our weekly off-to-market segment where we find out what's good at the market.
Coming up, we have David Borry with news and weather, but before that, we've got to chuck on a tune. So here's Revolver with One Puff Wonder. You're listening to the R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
And I'm under three, I'm on the ground, feeling like the room's spinning. My thoughts, they go, my attention is only for show. I've lost my head, just wish I were in bed. I'm tired, I'm worn, when will I be reborn? Too young to be this old, my best stories ever already been told. Myself, I'm asleep, but a girl's gotta eat.
Puff Wonder.
Two, and I'm under three.
Kia ora koutou, you're listening to the Ramere Awan News Show on Te Kau Mā Whitu o Pipiri. That was Revolver with One Puff Wonder, and now we have the legend, David Borrie, with some news and weather updates.
The R1 News Headlines.
Tēnā koutou, ko David tēnei. A fire at Rainbow Youth Centre in Tauranga is being treated as suspicious. The police were called to the historic building at approximately 12:45 on Thursday morning after reports of a fire, which destroyed the building. No one was in the building or injured in the fire. Whilst the fire has been confirmed as suspicious, any intent behind it has not yet been announced. The building housed a drop-in office for Rainbow Youth, who provide advocacy and support for LGBTQ+ adolescents and gender dynamics, who provide mental health care for transgender and non-binary people in the Bay of Plenty. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade says a new UK-free trade agreement will The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade says a new UK free trade agreement will free up revenue for the primary sector in New Zealand. MFAT says New Zealand agriculture exporters to the UK regularly face more than $37 million in tariff duties annually. A series of tariffs on primary sector imports are being lifted by the UK over the next 10 years, including seafood, apples, dairy, and beef. And those were the headlines on the R1 News. Now, kei te pēha, te ahua o Tarangi. How's the weather?
The R1 News weather.
E tēnei rā. Expect a high of iwa, 9, and a low of toru, 3, in Ōtiporti, with clear skies and light winds. A pōpō, a high of te kou mā toru, 11, is predicted, with a fine morning developing to showers and southwesterlies by midday.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
Kia ora Dave, for those stellar news and weather updates. You're listening to the R1 News on Ramere, Te Kau Mā Whitu o Pipiri. Up next on the program, we have economist Murat Ungo joining us for our business segment, Business as Usual, where we'll be talking about the gross domestic product and supply chain issues. But first, we have a song, Money, from the Flying Lizards. Take care, people.
For free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money. Everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money. Just
That was Money by the Flying Lizards, and you're listening to R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Now we are joined by Murat Ungur from the University of Otago's Department of Economics for this week's instalment of Business as Usual. Today we'll be talking about gross domestic product, GDP, the economy, and what's really going on with the supply chain. Kia ora, Murat. How are you this week?
Kia ora, Amelia. Thank you very much. I'm doing fine. I hope that everything is fine with you guys.
Thank you. So yesterday, Stats NZ reported that the GDP fell 0.2% in the March 2022 quarter, following a rise of 3% in the December 2021 quarter. How should we interpret this figure, and what does it say about the state of our economy at the moment?
Sure. This is a very important question, Amelia. And Reserve Bank, in their forecast in the Monetary Policy Statement in May, they forecasted 0.7% growth for the March quarter. And just a couple days before the announcement, ANZ Research penciled in a flat quarter growth, which is 0%. So basically, any figure between 0 and 0.7 or a slightly negative growth wouldn't be a surprise. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised with the announcement of yesterday, and no economist is also surprised. So we should remember that the March 2022 quarter began with all of New Zealand in orange traffic light setting, except for Northland, because they were in red traffic light setting. And if I remember correctly, it was 23rd of January when all New Zealand moved to the red setting as Omicron cases spread within the community and with daily case numbers peaking in March. In other words, the country remained at the red setting for the remainder of the March quarter, and that affected our economic growth rates. And two of the three industrial groups, for example, fell. Economic activity in primary industries fell. There were also slight declines in good producing industries, in manufacturing. If we look at the service industries, of course, there is a lot of heterogeneity within service sector, but service sector group remained relatively flat. One thing that we have to understand is that New Zealand is one of the last developed countries to report its GDP figures each quarter. In other words, there's a time lag. We already knew all other major countries' growth rate before yesterday. So there's a time lag in terms of New Zealand's announcement, and this time lag reduces the value of the data in helping determine future economic policies. And if you just remember the earlier days of the pandemic, we started in 2020 with two consecutive negative growths. And then, for example, if you remember, GDP was down like 1.2% in the March 2020 quarter. And then we had the record drop, like more than 10% decline in June quarter of 2020. And then there's a little bit bounce effect in 2021. GDP climbed 1.7% in March 2021 quarter, and then we had another increase in the second quarter of 2021. And if you remember, last year we had another lockdown, and that's why the economy shrank around 3.8% in the September 2021 quarter. And there was another positive growth in December quarter. So basically, there are lots of fluctuations. Effect of COVID is still with us, and there are also international effects. All these factors, both domestic and the global factors, affect our economic growth rate.
Now, economies across the world have been deeply affected by the pandemic. How would you characterize the growth experience of Aotearoa New Zealand since the pandemic started in like 2020?
Sure. We have the starting rate going back to 2020. So if you remember the earlier days of the pandemic, what we observe is that New Zealand crashed into recession in the first half of 2020. What do I mean by recession? A technical recession, it's a basic technical definition. A technical recession is usually defined as two quarters of falling GDP. And that's exactly what we experienced in 2020. And if you look at from a bigger picture, GDP in the OECD area fell by 1.7% in the first quarter of 2020. and that was the largest drop since the 2.3% contraction in the first quarter of 2009, which is the global financial crisis time. So second quarter was also worse for the OECD area, with more than 10% contraction. So New Zealand growth rate in 2020 was very similar to the growth rate of many OECD countries. GDP was down 1.2% in the March quarter, and then, as I just said, more than 10% record decline in the June quarter of 2020. And there were some increases in 2021. This is normal because there was pent-up demand, and also we opened economy, so people start to consume things, and we also increase our production. So that's why there was some kind of bounce, rebounding effect in 2021. But we also got hit last year, if you remember the lockdown in August, etc. So we had contraction, major contraction, in the third quarter of 2021 with around 4% negative growth rate. So starting with the December 2021 quarter, we had some positive growth. Basically, many people, both private research institutions and also the Reserve Bank, they were projecting around like 2% growth in December 2021 quarter. But we learned that GDP actually rose 3% in the December 2021 quarter. And again, with the Omicron crisis and with the Ukraine-Russia war, we have this negative growth rate this quarter. We should also know that all these statistical agencies, they always revise their growth rates. So basically, we are going to learn a revised number in the upcoming quarters, maybe in the June quarter, maybe in the September quarter, and we will see. Perhaps it's not just minus 0.2%, maybe it's going to be 0% or minus 0.1% or positive 0.1%. So it's a continuous process, and we will have a better picture in June and also in September quarter. But we can say that the June quarter, June of 2022, may actually look a better a little bit, because we moved from red to orange around mid-April, I believe, and the economy opened up again. So we can have a little bit better forecast as of now for the June quarter.
Mm-hmm. And looking more globally, inflation is continuing to increase across the globe. Central banks are hiking their interest rates in many countries. What is the state of the global economy at the moment? Are we heading towards a global recession?
This is something that every major economist actually talking in these days. So yesterday was a very big day, Amelia. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve, which is the central bank of the United States, raised its benchmark interest rates 0.75 percentage point. And it was not just the U.S. The Bank of England also raised interest rates yesterday, and Swiss National Bank raised its interest rate for the first time in 15 years. Hong Kong raised interest rate by 75 basis points. As we know, Reserve Bank of Australia, Reserve Bank of New Zealand, so basically all major reserve banks increasing interest rates. And the idea is to be able to fight with inflation, because in all major countries, we see very high inflation rates. In the United States, for example, consumer price index reached to 8.6%, which is the largest 12-month increase since the period ending December 1981 for the last four decades. So in New Zealand, we haven't seen the peak. I think inflation is going to increase both in New Zealand and in the rest of the world. So we have high inflation, and on top of that, we have low growth rates. And recently, two major institutions, World Bank and IMF, International Monetary Fund, they actually revised their growth rates, their growth forecast. For example, World Bank, so global growth is expected to slump from 5.7% in 2021 to 2.9% in 2022. This is significantly lower than 4.1% that was anticipated in January. So basically, international institutions constantly revising global growth. And we have war in Ukraine, lockdowns in China, supply chain disruptions. Therefore, we have the risk of stagflation. Stagflation is the word that we are going to hear a lot. Stagflation basically refers to a phenomenon that we experienced in the 1970s. It's a high inflation rate and also low growth rate. And stagflation hurts people in two different ways. One, the stuff you are buying is more expensive. That's why we are talking about cost of living crisis. And secondly, you have less income. Your wage growth is less than the price increases. That's why your real wage constantly decreases. And when you go to the supermarket, you are afford to buy less of the goods. So for many countries, for many major countries, recession will be very hard to avoid next year. So many economists expecting a recession in 2023 for major economies.
All right, thank you so much for talking on such a complicated topic, Murat. Maybe next week we can talk about how to get the country out of a recession.
Sure. It's also another difficult question.
Yeah, I bet. Awesome. Have a great week, Murat. Take care.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That was economist Murat Ungur from the University of Otago Department of Economics speaking on global, domestic products.
Yes, GDP and the economy and all those
stagflation
things.
All those great money things that I love so much. That's fantastic. Okay, what do we have up next on the program, Amiria?
Coming up next, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Crystal Olin from the University of Otago Wellington about sustainable cities and changes to housing and communal spaces that should be happening in Aotearoa to help meet our 2030 carbon reduction targets.
Sounds absolutely based. Before we get to that, though, we've got to play a little song. And so we have Karalho Voador from Faith No More, from their fantastic 90s album, King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. It's fantastic. You're listening to the R1 News here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Take care.
That was Faith No More. You're listening to Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, Radio 191 FM. This is the R1 News Show for Friday, the 17th of June. The international science journal Wellbeing, Space and Society has recently published findings from University of Otago researchers which indicate that Aotearoa New Zealand needs to increase the diversity and quality of its housing stock to meet the needs of Aotearoa's diverse population and meet its 2030 carbon reduction targets. We are now joined by research fellow Dr. Crystal Olin from the New Zealand Centre of Sustainable Cities, who's going to tell us about how we can achieve a more sustainable future through changing housing, public transport and developing communal spaces. Kia ora.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
So what is so problematic about the conventional development style which we currently have in New Zealand that focuses on standalone homes and small, densely packed apartments?
Well, that's exactly part of what the problem is that there is a limit of choice in Aotearoa at the moment. So there's quite the emphasis still on providing single-family, low-density homes or the densely packed inner-city apartments without sufficient communal space or access to public spaces where people can come together socially or do other things. What that means is that you've got housing that's catering to only some of our population and not the wider spectrum, which is, quite a diverse population. So we're missing some of those middle options, which might be medium density housing that could accommodate, for example, multi-generational family arrangements. That doesn't necessarily need to be one large house that contains multiple generations of one family within it, but it could be, a sort of medium density neighborhood in which you've got grandparents who live a couple doors down, or, you've got different kinds of models where people can live in proximity to each other and thrive in that proximity. In terms of enabling people to get to know one another that they might not already know. So the importance of being able to sort of encounter your neighbors in the spaces around where you live, experience diversity on the streetscape, experience that sociality that and combat isolation through having, say, a park or a lovely plaza or even just some nice places to sit around where you live outside. The other thing that's lacking quite a lot in New Zealand is actually that accompanying green space. So, there's a lot of research that demonstrates the importance of having access to green space, either visually and or actually literally being able to go into a park or a reserve or a tree-lined street. Is actually really positively impactful on people's well-being. At the moment, sort of the green spaces, we do have a lot of them, but they aren't necessarily immediately accessible to people's everyday homes and their everyday patterns of living. So how to build that into our development patterns as well.
What is the link between well-being and well-designed housing?
That's complex and contested, and it's not always the same in every place. People are different in different places. Different understandings of what well-being actually is. Cross different cultures can impact in terms of the role that housing plays. So there's no sort of one model fits all. Which is part of the reason why we need a diversity of choice. But they're all across cultures. People need homes that they feel secure in. Whether that's renting or buying, they need to know that home is theirs, for a substantial amount of time, if not indefinitely, that they're not at risk of losing that home permanently, and that's not out of their control. People need warm, dry, well-ventilated homes. So, New Zealand is notorious for cold, leaky, damp, drafty homes, and that's not that's not good for people, both in terms of their physical well-being as well as their emotional and mental well-being. People need homes that, you know, that can speak to their identities and that accommodate their everyday lives and the lives of their whānau and, you know, homes that they're proud of, that they want to invite family and friends into, that they, you know, are able to, you know, to host and to have that, you know, that generosity to extend outward. They need to feel connected. So, you know, one of the problematic things with the suburban development models where you have these single family homes is that, you know, people can be too spread out and not easily connected to others. It might be difficult to access other people who they need or want to spend their time with. And that isolation is really hard on people's well-being. So, you know, where we've got housing models that can actually facilitate people coming together, there are lots of proven benefits for that and how people be able to flourish.
Your research also talks about public transport and how that can lead to a more sustainable future. Do public transport systems need to be structured more effectively, or do cities need to be developed differently to accommodate more usage of public transport?
I would say both of those things are true. So we need, you know, we need access to public transport, and we need public transport that runs efficiently and regularly. So, you know, when someone wants to go get a train or a bus, they need to know that it's reliably going to be there when it says it will be there. You know, the Swiss people are particularly good at that, and the Germans. New Zealand, you know, there's quite a lot of variability. I take the train myself, and, you know, it's usually not arriving when it says it will arrive, and the buses are even worse. So I do think that the system itself actually needs to improve. We could benefit from buses as well that actually work with the way that our cities are laid out. So these really large empty buses that are running, very large buses that are running empty for a good portion of the day aren't necessarily maximizing the potential there. And smaller buses that actually don't get stuck on the sort of windy, narrow roads and can perhaps more run more often, or there could be more of them at the same time running, might actually suit the New Zealand context a bit better. And we need to look at how we lay out our development. So, you know, individual houses are, it's important that they can stand, as long as they can stand. So the sustainability of any building is important, but lasts a lot longer in terms of thinking about cities and landscapes. But lasts a lot longer than an individual building or house. It's the city or the street, the network of streets that structure how those buildings and houses are laid out. So we need to actually get those streets laid out effectively from the beginning and ensure that they're well connected up so that public transport is viable. There's something called transit-oriented development. That is a term that's used in some other contexts. I haven't heard it too much in New Zealand, but basically there's a good model of development that looks at clustering both homes and a variety of other uses, so shops and retail and schools and, you know, public buildings and such around where you've got transport nodes and corridors. And I know that's something that New Zealand's looking at increasing nationwide in terms of densifying along transport corridors and nodes. So if we get that right in terms of how we do that, that could really be beneficial as well.
Now, you mentioned, was it German public transport and other European structures? Is there another country or community style we should be looking for inspiration to model off of?
That's a good question. I think I'm from the States originally, and I've always taken an international perspective on things. I think New Zealand's a very special place. There's nowhere in the world quite like it, and so I wouldn't suggest that any one model in another country would be appropriate to sort of copy and paste into Aotearoa, but there are certainly lessons. Aotearoa's relatively young country, particularly when it comes to the kind of development that we're looking at now as we densify and grow. And there are lessons that can be learned from overseas. And the benefit is that New Zealand doesn't have to make all of the same mistakes that have been made, for example, in the States or in different parts of Europe. We can look at what hasn't worked there and, you know, perhaps not go down that same road and actually look at what has worked, and then look at how that could be adapted to the local communities and cultures here. So I'd say there's not the one place in particular to look, but there are some really encouraging sustainable development models that are being trialed and researched in all sorts of other countries, including Australia and the States and Canada and different countries in Europe. So it's worth having a look at what's going on around the world and then see what New Zealand might want to sort of trial here and adapt to the local context.
So for Aotearoa, what stands in our way for us creating these more sustainable communities, and how can we get on the path towards establishing a sustainable future for housing?
I think there are a number of things. One of the things is it's not so much what's standing in our way as what could open up and dissolve some of those barriers. First of all, it's just encouraging a shift in mindset about, you know, what the New Zealand dream is. I know that's happening with, you know, up-and-coming generations, but I would encourage it even more. There's a variety of different ways, right, that we can live and be happy. There's not just one recipe for everyone. So, you know, moving away from that conventional idea of the, you know, house and the yard and 2.5 kids and a dog. And, you know, that works for some people, but it doesn't work for everyone. So, you know, really encouraging that opening of mindsets about what people are striving toward and realizing, you know, what's a good life for them. More sort of pointedly, important barriers for achieving sort of more collective models of housing. First of all, similar to the last point, that there's actually not very many successful examples of, say, collective co-housing developments in New Zealand. So it's a relatively foreign kind of model of development, which makes it a little bit scary, right? Whereas in Europe and the US, there's quite a lot of examples, and increasingly in Australia too. So just getting that familiarity, getting some good examples of different ways of building and living can really go a long way for people to see, oh, that can work here. But there's a lot of barriers standing in the way in terms of the regulatory environment and the financial environment. So most district plans, for example, don't accommodate collective approaches to housing, like co-housing or papakāinga. They're oriented to the conventional development that's been, you know, rolled out in this country for the last 50 to 100 years. And those specific plans need to change. They're not fit for purpose anymore if we are going to open up these possibilities. Same with the financial institutions. They don't tend to accommodate collective approaches to ownership, although I see that might be changing with some institutions now that housing prices are so high and some families are needing to look at, you know, co-owning a place together. So maybe just due to financial pressures alone, that might be starting to shift. There's currently no legislation around collective housing development, so they can only be done on a unit title model, you know, at the moment, but that Unit Titles Act is not currently fit for purpose. And, you know, the regulatory process is actually difficult to navigate for anyone, even for more conventional developments, unless it's your everyday job to navigate it. So it's even harder when you're trying to do something that's, you know, seen as unconventional or different or challenging the status quo. So we need to sort of enable these pathways that help people, you know, experiment with different things and try different things and be a little bit more fluid about what it is we actually build and learn from how we build and how we live.
Thank you for coming on and talking with us, Dr. Crystal.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next on the program, we have the infamous astrology report. But first, we're going to go to Horse and Cart. You're listening to the R1 News here on Radio 1. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It's currently 11:43. Keep it locked.
as the chimneys burn. I'll drink some beers to find my way.
Big epic source time here on Radio 1. Kia ora, how's it going? You're listening to the Astrology Report, and to the dispiriting and degrading Astrology Report, I might add. It's a weekly segment where we do some hard star-based yakka to help make your day go just that little bit smoother. Now, okay, who do we have on the roster today?
Aries and Taurus.
We sure do. So I'm going to be taking the Aries, and Miria is going to be taking the Tauruses. So Aries, beware of technology today, my dear Aries. As the chronically online Aquarius moon kickstarts your solar 11th house, your devices are going to become a gigantic distraction of epic proportion. Although you'll be in the mood for human connection, endeavour to make sure you aren't endlessly swiping on Dunedin's finest, or bringing Netflix, or binging Netflix when you really ought to be studying. It's exam season and you desperately need those grades, my G. Instead of bowling over an entire series in one go today, Aries, set small and achievable performance goals for your study, and then microdose that new show in study breaks. You can reward yourself in the near future with a big rock once you've cleared your exams. Off to you, Miria.
Now, on to you, Alpha Tauruses. As the Patrick Bateman-esque Aquarius moon shoots into your solar 11th house this arvo, you'll be feeling more career-focused than ever and ready to make new connections. You could use this energy to collaborate with your fellow Sigmas, or you could try to convince your grandparents to maybe buy an NFT. Whatever makes you feel the most, you Taurus, sadly, the day won't be all rising and grinding, Taurus. The hashtag vibe will get a little unhinged this evening as Luna enters a harsh square with odorous Uranus. Be on the lookout for bruised egos, fluctuating stamina, and heightened stress levels. Make sure to ground yourself after all this tension by being around people that help you love Taurus. I recommend you assemble a posse of mates, have a few DMCs, and then watch Wolf of Wall Street, because you gotta stay grinding.
That was the R1 Astrology Report for... Did Tacoma Fitu or Pipiri? Here we go. It's currently 11:49 on the program. Up next we have... Off to Market with Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll. We'll be finding out what's good in the market. But first, we've got Starlight by the Superman Lovers. Take care. Koto, folks, that was Starlight by the Superman Lovers. It's currently 11:53 here on the R1 News for Ramere, Titakoma, Fitu, or Pipiri. And we currently have Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll on the line to talk about what's good at the market. How's it going, Michelle?
Good, thank you. Kia ora.
Kia ora. So, what is good at the market this weekend?
We've got lots of those frost-sweetened yams and parsnips still, and got freshly dug potatoes and celery, lots of shallots and garlic and apples and pears, of course, and kale and Cavaliero Nero and this red cabbage and green cabbage, and there's also some lots of salad greens from Jane Field Hydroponics. They're all grown, obviously, in the hothouses, so that's mm-hmm. why they're still going. But, yeah, there's lots of goodies.
Mm, speaking of yam season, have you got any recommendations about some good stuff to cook up with them?
I think they're really good, like with a good roast. You know, you can put them with some garlic, put them with a little bit of honey or a maple syrup, even though they're quite sweet already, and they just end up this really delicious sort of accompaniment to any meal. And obviously, really good at the moment with if anyone's doing any feasts at the moment, cooking up a meal for family and friends, Matariki or midwinter solstice, which is next Tuesday,
true,
or midwinter Christmas, or however you want to name it. It's a good time of the year to kind of do that.
Speaking of Matariki, is the market going to be happening next weekend as well?
Yep, we're always open on Saturday, so there'll be plenty of goodness to buy. I mean, at the moment, there's also like the Catlin's Coast premium lamb at Princess Street Butchery, which if you want to splash up and have a good roast, that'd be a pretty amazing cut of meat to have. Also, Harbour Fish, you get there really early, and a few people in the know knows do it. They get there and they get a whole fish, which, you know, then you cook in the whole thing, and that's pretty amazing. You could do an amazing fish curry, or, you know, from nose to tail, or you know, a roast whole fish with chili and olive oil and all sorts of, you know, potatoes and all sorts with that.
Mm. Use the whole product.
Yeah.
Nothing left behind. Yeah, that's like a problem with, I think, a lot of the way we live. We don't use the whole thing. You know, we could be using it all and not chucking it out. It's great.
You can make a good stock from it as well. You know, there's so many things to do from a whole fish.
Yeah.
Havoc, they've also, they've obviously got their pork, which is all free-range pork. But they've also got often a $5 or $6 hock, and there's actually quite a lot of meat in those, and you can put those with veggies. They're really good. It's got a lot of flavour through. At the moment there's Mulled Gin this week.
Mulled?
So that's Dunedin Craft Distillery, and they make all their gin from leftover bread, so
it's
definitely very sustainable. You know, nothing's wasted.
Hey, have you had a try of it before?
I'm not really a gin drinker, but she has it warm as little samples.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely worth checking them out up on the platform.
Mulled gin. I've never...
That's been very popular.
My gosh, mulled gin. Sounds fantastic, actually.
Yeah, great for a cold winter
smells amazing.
Morning.
yeah. Good thing to have just before your exam.
Yeah.
A bit of liquid courage.
Yeah.
My gosh. Awesome. Well, it sounds like everything's going pretty groovy at the farmer's market then.
Yeah, it's all good. I was going to say, too, if anyone's interested in ever busking at the market, there's all our details on our website, and you can pay a $5 fee, and then there's usually a two-hour slot where we get different buskers through, and, you know, it's always good to have someone new for that, so they can always get in contact with me if they'd be interested, and usually that's... with no amplification is what we prefer, but you know, if anyone wants to kind of do that, we are always up for a conversation on that. What else? And just, you know, buying at the market, you know, you're eating in season, you're eating regionally, you're eating healthily, you know, and it ends up being a less amount of money for you if you do eat in seasonally, and there's no food miles, they're really short, so that's always a really good thing.
Fantastic.
But I just recommend, mask up, bring your keep cups, bring any jars or returns of anything. You know, we've always got that reuse system happening at the market. There's lots of brunch options and coffee options to warm everyone up. But, yeah, you know, Matariki, there's lots of product, you know, if you want to cook up a big feast.
Mm. It's like potluck season at the moment, so definitely valuable stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on to speak with us, Michelle.
You're welcome. Happy Matariki.
Take care.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.
That was Michelle Driscoll, market manager from the Otago Farmers Market, for our weekly segment, Off to Market. Sounds like a great day tomorrow to head out to the train station, get some local goodies.
Get some mulled gin.
Mmm, yeah. Crazy stuff.
Absolutely brazy.
We've had a big show today, haven't we?
We sure have. We've had business as usual, you know, looking at the GDP, and then we've...
The big economy stuff. We also spoke with Dr. Crystal Olin about some research into sustainable housing and how to develop more sustainable cities.
And we had the astrology report with Aries and Tauruses and usual nonsense stuff.
Yeah.
And...
That's been our show. That's our news for Ramere Friday, the 17th of June. And as always, tune in 11 to 12 weekdays for that dose of current affairs on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Take care, gang.
You've been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.